Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Now, today I wanted to give an update on the clinical side of the healthcare problem that we're all facing. Open enrollment is coming up soon, and I think people are going to be in for sticker shock, which I've spoken about before. One of the things that doesn't get spoken about a lot is what's really going on the front line of the healthcare system. I've heard some stories recently from patients that just really blew my mind. I wanted to talk about that so people could get a feeling for really what's out there and what's happening so people can start making conscious choices about how they want to approach the fiasco that we want to call medicine at this point. You know, Dave, I was speaking to a patient last week. I hadn't seen her for about 4 or 5 years, and she came in with a new diagnosis of diabetes. So I asked her, you know, when was this diagnosed? And she told me she ended up going to the emergency room and because she was feeling poorly. And they found out she had a blood sugar of 300, which is pretty, I mean, extremely high. And high enough that in the old days, you'd be admitted to the hospital. You would be treated accordingly with IV fluid, insulin, et cetera. They would, after they stabilized you, you would get a consult with a nutritionist. You would have a dietitian come in and your doctor would start you on a regimen of, insulin or whatever the medication would be. But you would be taught exactly what about your disease process and what you would need to do to move forward, since it's an extremely taxing diagnosis because it changes your what you need to do on a daily basis. And do you know what they did, Dave? Can you imagine what happened after she was diagnosed? Do you think that they admitted her? Do you think that they treated her in the manner that I just described? What do you think happened?
They sent her home.
Exactly. They sent her home with a follow-up with the advisor to follow up with her primary care doctor. You know, just not even an appointment, mind you, but just to call them and get a follow-up. I've never heard of anything like that. It's just the stories are getting worse and worse. So she gets her, been living with diabetes for the last several years. And the day before I saw her, she ended up in the emergency room again because she felt faint, dizzy, et cetera. So she goes to the hospital, and she has a GI issue, so she gets dehydrated. I think that she took her insulin before she ate, and that's what caused her to feel faint. But she was dehydrated. So instead of putting her on IV, monitoring her blood sugar, she's told to drink 5 glasses of water, and they send her home. So, I mean, it's like, excuse me? I mean, you could be dehydrated. Your electrolytes could be out of whack. No workup. Just drink 5 glasses of water and see you. Follow up with your primary care doctor. It's just shocking and appalling that this is what's going on in the healthcare system. And mind you, she did not go to a clinic. In the first instance, she went to one of the major hospitals in Atlanta. In the second instance, because she was so unhappy with that care, she went to the second major hospital system in Atlanta. So this is not something that you're getting some clinic, some doc in the box. You know, we used to call the people who have these little clinics that are not private, the doc in the box. No, it's not that. It's a top-tier hospital system, one of the two of the best hospitals in the country, teaching hospitals, mind you. So this is the standard of care that people are getting. Let me give you another example. Patient has a mass in their arm, and they have had it for several years. They've been worked up at major hospitals, and it's not gotten better. The person has pain, problems moving their arm, so they go for like a third opinion. And after the workup, No, initially, let me just say, if you have any kind of mass or tear, but your thyroid, anywhere in your body, what generally has to happen is you need a piece of tissue to diagnose the problem. There's no way that anybody can actually look at a CT scan or an MRI or any radiology study and pronounce with definitively that you have this diagnosis. You just can't do it. You need an actual biopsy. So before this person went in to get it done, they were, you know, we're going to get the CT or the MRI. They're going to, that's going to give us the baseline. Then we're going to send you for, have you go for a biopsy. So the scan is done. There's a comparison to the prior scan. And it's pronounced that, oh, there's no change. This is definitely benign. Follow up with us in a year. But you don't know what the diagnosis is. How do you know the person's having issues with mobility and pain? And it's like, oh, well, you know, we're sure we know what it is. It's not a big deal. Follow up in a year. I mean, I'm shocked that people are, or doctors and hospital systems are not doing workup and treatments anymore. It's almost like they get you to the point that they do the workup, the radiology, the blood work to get the diagnosis, but when it comes down to the treatment, when you have to use hospital resources, et cetera, they try to punch you out to the outpatient side. Whether you should be there or not, it's just shocking. We've spoken about this on several occasions, but now there are two examples that one may be, you know, some abnormal tissue that is not addressed, not worked up properly. You're just sitting on your own and just monitored. And another one where you have a disease process that is taxing. It can change from hour to hour depending on what you're eating, if you're ill, you name it. And, you know, you're basically put on your own. I think I gave this last diagnosis, this example, a while back after I spoke with a person in California. So this is not just the East Coast. This is California now, where a senior citizen had symptoms of a stroke. And she went to the hospital. They admitted her. Did they do a workup? I think they did do a workup to diagnose it as a transient ischemic attack, where you have a decrease in the blood flow to the brain, which gives you stroke symptoms, but it's not a complete block. But you need to do a workup, and you need to figure out what's going on before the person actually does have, it's like a warning sign, an actual stroke. So this particular hospital didn't have, I don't think they had a neurologist or some sort of follow-up with a specialist for her to have this angiogram and specific workup. So instead of transferring her, they sent her home to await an appointment with somebody who could work her up. And mind you, it wasn't the next day. It was a couple of weeks or so down the road. And she was going to have to travel hundreds of miles to get the consult. So we have three examples now. Nobody's on Medicare. Well, actually, the last patient was on Medicare. But these other patients had regular insurance, not government-based insurance in some instances. And the standard of care is the same throughout each of these examples. And it's completely changed from what it was 10, 15 years ago. Why? But these people are paying through the nose. You know, if you have a deductible, if you have an out-of-pocket cost, they're going to take that from you and not give you the treatment now. I mean, this is just beyond the pale. I mean, I don't know if you have any examples on your end, Dave, but this is now becoming the norm, the new normal of standard of care in our healthcare system.
No examples on my end, no. You know, what you're saying, though, is just, it's totally frightening. And as you mentioned as well, sticker shock is just around the corner. And Obama's going to laugh at it and run out the door and leave it for somebody else.
Well, if he has his way and if the Democrats continue to have power, it's going to be a double-down approach. I mean, they're already talking about the public option as the antidote for fixing this problem. And let's talk a bit about the public option, because I think it's all about language all of a sudden, how something sounds not what it means, but how it makes your mind think ahead. You know, public option sounds like, oh, this should be an alternate choice. You know, we've already done the, throwing a blank on it, but they had, each state had its own, you know, what's the name of the game? I'm throwing a blank on what they used to have, where the insurance companies were.
The exchanges? Exchanges,
thank you. No, I couldn't remember that word. But that was the first level of this thing where the exchanges were online, and that was supposed to be a clearinghouse for people to go to get cheap insurance. And it turns out some of these states only have one insurance company as a choice. That's not competition. That's a monopoly. So if you're the only game in town where you only have one insurance plan to pick, they're going to gouge the hell out of you. And that's what's going on in Arizona. I think it's going on in some town in Florida as well. I'm sure there's many, many more examples of this because these insurance companies have, again, become too big to fail. They've gotten rid of their competition. They bought them out. There are now five major insurance companies that are nationwide. And they're in the process in some instances that they have their choice of joining together, Humana and Aetna, Cigna and Blue Cross. It's a disaster where the government has just allowed annexation and centralization and monopolization, and it's caused everything to go up in terms of price. Now, I don't see how public option makes a difference unless you really are think about what it means. It means Medicaid for all. We've already seen that. Most people who joined the Affordable Care Act joined Medicaid. They didn't join a private insurance company. They didn't have a choice. They were put on Medicaid, and they're paying a special Medicaid where they have to actually pay money, a lot of money in some instances, in order to access it. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And I know we have to take a break in a minute or so, but before we take the break, I want to give one last example or an example of what the subsidies in the Affordable Care Act are like. I heard a gentleman get on the radio and talk about his family. He's a single dad. He has three children. One has a disability. So last year they were getting, obviously, help for the medical care, and the child was covered by, I guess, the children's version of Medicaid, and they were getting a subsidy for covering the rest of the family. When the tax time came this year, he used to get a tax credit of $7,000 because he has children. That was cut by $4,000 because under the new Affordable Care Act, he was told that he wasn't covered by insurance. It doesn't matter that his children, he has a disabled child, he was on Obamacare for some reason, he was deemed to not be covered, and they took $4,000 of his money. I wonder how many people this will happen to next year. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, if people really do the due diligence and start looking at the history of the high cost of health care, what's gone on in the healthcare system, especially since 1998, when the HMOs first got started, then they can see that this is not a new process. Like, we're seeing this as the Twilight of Race came on a few weeks ago, and discussed. This is a revisit of the HMO plan. And the power is shifting even more so to the insurance companies. They are in a position that they've been gaming the system, and they own the healthcare market. And what the Affordable Care Act did, it just empowered them further. So when they talk about affordable, they use the playbook of the insurance companies to make them monopolies, to give them subsidies, to give them mandated customers. And the only reason, and I've said this before, and I just read a blog from her entitled "Is Obamacare Collapse Just a Ploy?" And if you go to cchfreedom.org, you can read this article. because it really does put a different light on the situation. I've mentioned it briefly before, but I thought that they were playing chicken. There's no reason why the insurance companies can't do whatever they want. It doesn't hurt them to drop enrollees, to drop people who are sicker than they should be, or want them to be, I should say, because it costs them. It doesn't bother them that they have less enrollees. They can make it up some other way. They have a great treasure trove of money that they've saved over the years of gouging people, taking premiums and not paying out to doctors or hospitals. That's what they do. So all their job is, in their opinion, in my opinion, I should say, is to make more money. And the way you do it is you raise the premiums. You get to decide what care is given because your insurance, the guidelines of your insurance of what's covered is internally made. They don't even have to follow, and they don't, the Medicare guidelines. Remember, or maybe you don't know, insurance companies don't pay for the same, private insurance companies don't pay for the same things that Medicare pays for. Plenty of things that Medicare covers is not covered by the insurance. They just make it up. It's experimental. It's not covered. It's not part of our insurance cafeteria plan of diseases or procedures that we cover. They could just do that. And there's no recourse. We've been fighting for over a year for a procedure that was performed on a patient that's allowed under Medicare, Medicaid, that we went to, and the American Association of Otolaryngology, head and neck surgery, but the insurance company just says, well, we're not going to pay it, and tough. And we've gone through every iteration, including the insurance commissioner, and because the insurance company rules the situation, and it's completely divorced from what is really medically necessary from a medical perspective, they just get to do what they want to do. So what if, and what's the skin off their nose to say, we're going to drop out of this many states. We're going to get rid of our HMOs and our coverage for this many states. They could care less because they're making it up elsewhere. And what she mentioned, and people, I want to reiterate and remind people, is that they only have to stay open in a certain number of states in order to jump back in to offering the HMO plans they have. So what they're doing is they're playing hardball. They're squeezing the government to get more money. Now, the pot that they were able to access for coverage, no matter whether or not they have patients who join their plans, the government was paying them to make them whole. So there was a subsidy, a welfare handout to the insurance companies that the government stopped giving. That's the reason, I think, and as she confirms in her blog, that's one of the reasons that they stopped doing covering people. And when the public option is, if it comes online, it's going to be like the Medicare for All, or the Medicare Advantage plans in the past. When they did this first time, back, I guess, in late 90s, early 2000s, and the insurance companies whined, Medicare Advantage came online, and that was designed to pay the insurance companies more than traditional Medicare. That didn't help the doctor. It didn't really help the patient. It was a windfall for the insurance companies. I can pretty much guarantee you that public option will do the same thing. So they'll get paid more money to keep them happy, to help make them open up more plans across the country. But the standard of care, as we just described, is going down the toilet. That's not going to change. The out-of-pocket that people are paying is not going to change. They're still going to cost shift to the patient, but they're going to get more money from the government, from the public option, your money in taxes going up to pay them more money for what they do, for, quote, administration, which is nothing, which is essentially just denying care on steroids. It's what they do. The only way that we can break this system, and I can't emphasize it enough, is for doctors and patients to stop participating in a system that works against both of us. I don't care if you go to a concierge doctor, to a direct primary care doctor, as long as you're not partaking of this particular system, which is they want it to be the only game in town. You're not going to be party to these costs, these artificial costs, artificial price structure, and artificial medicine that's given or doled out on a winners and losers basis. I can pretty much tell you that anybody in Congress is not getting the same standard of care that you or I are getting in the real world. They get to go to a concierge doctor or pay for out of pocket. They may have an insurance plan, but I can pretty much assure you that they're able to cover whatever costs that they need to cover, and they don't have to decide if I'm going to pay rent or go to the doctor or put gas in my car or go to the doctor. And the sad part is the doctor is also on the hook for practicing medicine in a standard, in a manner that they trained to do. I mean, it's just amazing, and it's just like this template that's going through the system, and nobody seems to get in trouble. I'm sure, Dave, you've heard about the Wells Fargo fiasco, right, where they basically opened up credit card accounts for hundreds of Wells Fargo customers, didn't tell them, ruined their credit, made a ton of money off of people, and nobody's going to jail. They just fired the underlings as if it was their fault when it was really run from up on high. It's like a mafia. Have you heard about that?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Definitely.
I mean, what if nobody's going to go to jail? They just get to say, I'm sorry, and that's it?
You know, I'm like you. And I don't know what to do. Whether I don't want any more federal government interfering with anything, but somebody has to step in. I don't know if feds should step in, Treasury Department should step in, State of New York.
Attorney General should step in. How about that?
That would be nice, but she's out talking about grandkids that she doesn't have. And
what?
You know.
I didn't hear that one.
Oh, yeah, well, with Bill Clinton. And you didn't hear about that?
No, I missed that one. There's so much stuff going on.
When,
it's like an overwhelming of information.
This was a couple of months ago that Bill Clinton had given a speech, and the Attorney General was flying in, Loretta Lynch was flying in, and they met at the same airport, and all they talked about was golf and their grandkids. Well, she has no grandkids, and she doesn't play golf.
Wow. Okay. Fascinating.
Yeah. You got to look that up. I would have thought you'd have been all over that.
Oh, I know that they met. But, you know, this is such a reality, theater that we're living in. You wonder all these things go on. Is it just to distract you? Is it to get you so angry that you stop thinking and just remove yourself from the system? You know, it's like they're almost trying to break our will because everything is just so counter to, I don't know, ethics, morals, you name it.
Oh,
it just doesn't make any sense.
The best one I heard was, I guess it was yesterday, Bush was there, and so was the guy running for Congress in Florida, and he had been a Republican. He was a Republican governor, then he changed parties, and I don't even know what his name is. Now he's a Democrat, and someone asked him, well, are you going to vote for Hillary? And he said, yes, I'm going to vote for her because I think she's got great leadership qualities, and he listed off something else and then said, and she's honest, and the crowd literally started laughing. It was beautiful.
I think that was my Charlie Crist in a debate in Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The whole thing is pretty much laughable. I mean, they've come to the point now they just edit things out or put things into the, you know, that crawler. You have to be careful if you're listening to CNN or any of these mainstream media news stations, if you have a sound down and you just read the crawler, you know, that little thing that runs along the bottom or the little tagline they put up, it's not true, most of it. Apparently what they did to Trump recently is he talked about profiling and they stuck in the word racial profiling on the crawler. He didn't even say that. So it's, it's amazing. It's just come down to censorship, editing. Forget about trying to do a live interview where you just get cut off and you can't even get your thought out. It's extremely, I've never seen anything like it. If you have a thought, if you have a difference of opinion, this is, you know, whether you're going to vote for Trump or Clinton, that's up to you, honestly. But nobody should be in a position of being made to feel, to be frightened of a choice that they're making, because somebody's going to come after them physically, emotionally, monetarily. It's just amazing. It's just, it's a complete, I mean, it's just an intimidation cycle that we're dealing with. I don't even know how to put this, but I just wanted to give people the list of exemptions because, again, we have choices with the Affordable Care Act. You don't have to use that as your health care delivery system. And they have a whole list of exemptions for people who, let's say people in Louisiana or anybody who's had a natural disaster. They can actually use that as an exemption so that they don't have to be fined. So it says specifically, if you experienced a fire, flood, other natural or human-caused disaster that caused substantial damage to your property, that is one of the hardship exemption things that you can use. So people need to actually look at that. Again, I found this on cchfreedom.org, and what I'll do is I'll put this on my Facebook page so that when this cycle of the taxes come, you can look at this list. If you don't have coverage from a medical cost-sharing company like Liberty HealthShare or MediShare or Samaritan, or if you do have the Affordable Care Act and you can't afford it or you can't afford any insurance, this is what you can use to keep yourself from having your taxes taken from you when tax returns come back. So if you're homeless, if you were evicted in the past 6 months or were facing eviction or foreclosure, if you received a shutoff notice from a utility company, if you experienced domestic violence, if you've experienced the death of a close family member, as I said, at number six, it was fire, flood, or other natural disaster that caused damage to your property. If you filed bankruptcy in the past 6 months, if you had medical expenses you couldn't pay in the last 24 months, that should cover everybody, actually. Number eight, you experience unexpected increases in necessary expenses due to caring for an ill, disabled, or aging family member. If you expect to claim a child as a tax dependent who's been denied coverage in Medicaid or CHIP, another patient or another person is court ordered to pay for that child but can't, then you can claim a hardship exemption. If you're eligible to enroll in a qualified exchange plan, in a marketplace, lower cost on your monthly premiums or cost-sharing reductions, this is for a time period when you weren't enrolled. So basically, if you were eligible to join one of the marketplace plans in exchange, but it doesn't exist, you can claim exemption for that. You are determined ineligible for Medicaid because your state didn't expand eligibility for Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. You can claim exemption. So I believe if, for example, you live in Georgia and Georgia did not expand Medicaid, you can actually claim exemption. So these are really important pieces of information that people can protect themselves from having to pay a fine. And the last one was, your individual insurance plan was canceled, and you believe your other marketplace plans are unaffordable. Again, that's a huge catchment for a ton of people who would otherwise be on the hook. So that gentleman who had his exemption because he had, a child that was disabled, for him to have his tax return garnished the way it was, it wasn't right. I mean, based on this, he should have gotten an exemption without question. But, of course, there are errors that get made. People don't fight back because they figure, I can't fight back, it's the government. And I wonder how much money got seized this past tax season inappropriately, like that gentleman. And you saw that the taxes that the government's collected is a record high. Haven't you seen that? Is it $20 billion? Some crazy amount of money in taxes. But we're still in the red. How does that work?
It's somehow they always leave it out and don't mention it. By the way, we need to take a break if you can.
Sure, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I tell people, I just put this up on Facebook, that list of exemptions, hardship exemptions, that people need to know about if they're having problems paying for their insurance. That's an extremely important piece of information to have when as the open enrollment season is getting rolling. But I think people are going to be in for a rude awakening about how much these premiums are about to start costing. They're already crazy, but they're only going to get worse. And, you know, we could talk all day about what they should have done or what they could have done, but the fact is we're here in a situation where they have limited choice. They've limited access by making people self-ration because the costs are so high they don't even get things done. I had two surgeries canceled in the past couple of days, and both those patients have out-of-pocket costs because of the structure of their insurance companies. They can't afford to pay the deductible. They both have issues that are troubling them. Their quality of life is affected by it, but it's so hard to access their insurance plan that they're going without, and they're suffering because of that. I mean, you couple that with the gas prices that's gone up here in along the southeastern seaboard. Every state that's been affected by this pipeline spill, and it's a double whammy. So it's almost as if they're trying to make this as hard as possible on the people who want to just go about their daily lives and just be left alone. They're not having it. It's just becoming harder to keep your practice open, harder to see patients. Patients are finding it harder to even get in to see the doctor. And for those that can do it, if depending on where they go, their standard of care is completely different if they use a system-based hospital versus a private, independent physician. It's a complete different ballgame. It's not, as I said, I thought there was going to be a two-tier system of healthcare, and I think I'm right. These examples I started off with on the show are just the tip of the iceberg of what's happening in our healthcare system. And it's only going to get worse because the hospitals under this accountable care organization model, which is an HMO-based model, capitation, meaning you have a certain amount of money at the beginning of the year that you have to deliver health care on as the providing institution. So a hospital gets a certain amount of money from the government to take care of its patients and to pay for its staff, et cetera, to run its costs. At the end of the year, depending on how much health care they've delivered, that's their profit. The more health care they deliver, the less profit they have at the end of the year. It's a peculiar arrangement for incentives where you're not incentivized anymore to keep the patient in the hospital, to treat them. You can do a workup to diagnose it, but all of a sudden, the expense of the treatment is being affected. Whether it's cancer, whether it's stroke, we've seen diabetes, under my example, we've seen new diagnoses that would require surgery. These things aren't going forward anymore, not to the same degree that they were before. Much more management, much more, oh, well, you're not so bad, let's just follow you. It's not appropriate. I mean, if you have the ability to cure something, and if that means a person needs to have a surgery to cure it, it's unethical to deny a person that. It's immoral to do that based on cost to the hospital. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And patients are in a position, as we all are in this country, we have the power. We can decide that we're worthy and we're not going to take this and we're not going to pay into a system that works against us. Physicians are in a position where I think a lot of us, independent side, are deciding to withdraw our consent from this type of system. I'm about to go to the AAPS national meeting this week, and the whole tone, the whole motto of this meeting is to empower independent doctors to open up practices that are free market based, that don't subscribe to this system of rationing and artificial creation of lack. It's all lack of services, lack of empathy, lack of physicians, lack of choice. And it's all designed to put you in a system where you've got one way to do it, where they're going to take away your medical freedom, where they're going to decide, you know, you need this vaccine and you're going to get it. Otherwise, you know, it's all based on coercion and fear. That's not a system of health. It can't be. You can't make someone or help someone get better if they're living in a state of anxiety, depression. They can't afford it. All these things go counter to actually helping somebody. So this whole conference is about us taking our power back as independent doctors and giving us the tools that we can go back into our offices and create a system, further create a system, expand the system of abundance, of healthcare abundance, where choice reigns, where you can go and you can see prices of what it's going to cost to see this doctor versus that doctor. Who's got the best bedside manner for you? Who offers services in a manner that keeps you out of the hospital, that fixes the problem, that not just treats the symptom, but cures you? What a concept. That's what medicine should be like. And as we get more powerful and we stop being beholden or under the yoke of a system that makes it hard to even want to get up and do work in the morning for your patient, then that frees us to take that message to the patient. And I think from a common sense perspective, if patients really, really understood that the healthcare costs in the independent side, in the free market side, offer faster, cheaper, better medical care, they would choose it every time. And that's what we're going to do in this conference, is to take that message out to every patient that we are come in contact with, to go into the media and actually let people know that we exist. That's how we put pressure on these exchanges, on the Affordable Care Act, on Congress. If Congress learned anything about going up to D.C., they love the status quo. But when they feel the heat and their constituents start to complain and they have a question where they're going to get back in, then they start to listen. And when we do things on the independent side, on the free market side that work, and we're doing it without them, they want to join the bandwagon, jump on it, and try to co-opt it for their own. And that's when it becomes a change in the paradigm. When they're not getting it from the big companies anymore. They're getting it from us, the people who vote for them. And if we don't vote for them, it doesn't matter how much money they get from the lobbyists, because they're not in there to enjoy it. That's when they start listening to us. And until we decide that we're going to be consistent in that message, not just sometimes, and not forget about it, and not get distracted, that's when things are going to change. Would you agree, Dave?
Absolutely. And we have to take it, it's a two-way street. The patient and the doctor have to get on the same street, same road, and work together. And, you know, we do have a voice, but we have to exert that voice. And with that,
I agree.
We got to take a break.
Let's listen to Medicine on Call when we come back. Thank you. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I've, again, just to remind people, I've posted the list of exemptions, hardship exemptions, that people can go to and look at now that open enrollment season is coming online, that you don't have to be a victim of having to join this healthcare system that's going to bankrupt you and your family. And on the flip side, I would remind people again about the medical cost-sharing model. And again, you've got Samaritan, you've got MediShare, and Liberty Health Share is the one that I've chosen for myself, for my office. And I've had patients who've had insurance, who've switched on to Liberty Health Share. And it's like a completely different mindset. It's amazing how you can actually have coverage that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg, that you don't have these huge deductibles that you have to think about. Should I go because I can't afford to go? None of that stuff is in the system. And the fact that you and your doctor get to decide care is the most important thing about it. That if it's medically necessary, from pregnancy to cancer care to holistic treatments, it's covered. And there's no pre-certification. There's no begging. It's a compact that you make with Liberty Health Share and other members. And you run the show. You know, we're going to have another membership meeting during the fall here. And my objective when I go there this time is to start talking about what else can we start adding. You know, medical tourism was something that got added last year, which is a huge money saver for members. And being able to, if you need to, go out of the country for an innovative treatment and have it covered without you having to worry about it. To find the innovative side of medicine, what that means, you want to do something that's natural-based. No one's going to deny you that. No one gets to decide, I know what's best for you, and I'm going to, because I control the pocketbook, you're going to do what I tell you to do. That's how this healthcare system is set up at this point, and it is only going to get worse. They're about to, or they would like to, co-opt doctors in a licensure scheme that would make us have to do maintenance of certification in order to be licensed out of this in more than one state. And this is how the system is working. Nurses don't have to do this. If you are licensed in one state as a nurse, you can get a license in any state in our country without having to jump through a hoop. That's not the case. They don't want that to be the case for doctors. They want us to jump through 1,000 different hoops that, one, restrict our chance of practice, definitely cost us tons of money, and put us in a position where they can control our behavior. So being on the hook to spend a couple $1,000s every 4 or 5 years, and I think they want to make it even less time than that, in order to keep your license to practice medicine, makes you a potential victim of whatever new scam they want to put up. You know, you didn't get your vaccination, so you can't license. You can't get a licensure. You don't take Medicaid or Medicare in your practice, or Obamacare. You can't renew your license. Imagine a system where the doctor is so manipulated. You're not going to have doctors, not any good ones. You're going to have ones who do whatever they're told. And that means that you start denying care, not performing surgeries, because this is the standard, the evidence-based medicine standard that they've come up with, then you're not a doctor anymore. Then what are you? You're just, you know, part of this conveyor belt of medicine that's costing people money and providing no value, limited services, and you're just making people comfortable at the end. It's ridiculous. So having a patient decide to do their own due diligence, to not just take what they're given at face value, but to shop around to get the best care, that's how you do this. That's how you break the system. Every day I walk into my office, I'm seeing patients, at least one or two, who've gone through two or three different ENTs, didn't like the treatment that they got, and ended up seeing me. And at the end of our visit, it's a great feeling, because they universally say, no one's ever told me this. No one's ever taken the time to explain this. I feel so much better. That's what medicine's like. That's what medicine should be about. And I'm going to do everything in my power to expand my practice so that is the patient that's the only type of patient that I get to see, that I'm not on the hook for an insurance plan telling me what I can't do, but I'm in a position where I can tell the patient what I can do for them. That's what makes medicine fun, and that's what makes medicine worth doing. And any doctor out there who seems to my show, who doesn't wake up in the morning and feel that they're doing something good for their patient, you need to examine what you're doing in your practice. Because if it's not that, then you're working against your own interest and the interests of your patients. And you're empowering the system that's designed to take money, take your soul in terms of wanting to practice the Hippocratic Oath. That's what they want, to break our will, our spirit. And we let them do that, and then we fight back. That's a choice that everybody, I think, patient or doctor or American citizen, or anybody who loves America, has to get up and decide. I don't think you can sit on the fence anymore and hope for the best or hope for someone to fix it for you. I think you have to take a stand, and it's not going to be, you know, won't be easy, but I can tell you it's going to be empowering, and it's going to give you that feeling of I'm doing something worthwhile. I'm taking care of my own health. I'm taking my power back, and I'm going to control my fate and my destiny. Those are the things that I think that if people really take a step back from all of this onslaught of negativity, and that's really what it is, Dave, what you just described, if you turn on the news or start reading the internet and start following the trail of links, and you could be on the computer all day just becoming more disgusted, but feeling that what I'm not going to make a difference and why bother, that's the thing that you need to guard against. I actually feel the opposite. I feel that these are the problems. I'm going to do what I can to avoid the traps, to have my own system, my own little cocoon where I run my show, and I'm able to do what I train to do in whatever little niche that I can create for myself. I'm going to do that. But I think now, if more people get together and have the same mentality, that niche becomes the standard. It becomes the alternative. It becomes the power and the choice that gives people the option to stop doing the same thing and hoping for a different result. I think the same thing goes on in the radio system as well. I mean, I don't know what you're thinking, but October 1st could be an interesting time if they turn over the internet, isn't it?
There again, it's going to be very interesting. I have no clue. I know that there are a lot of attorneys that are are waiting to see what happens and where we can, what we can do about it.
Well, one thing you can do is contact your congressperson and tell them to not support this, to not fund it. The Congress has the power to stop this from happening. And I read an interesting article about how this could potentially affect our elections, and it shouldn't be done in an election season because it can have a tremendous effect in, you know, just chaos. If we're not running the policemen of the internet anymore, then you can have rogue countries decide, oh, we're going to shut down this website, or we're going to, if something happens apparently to your website, you don't really have control anymore of who do you go to complain to. Do you end up getting licenses to actually have a website? All sorts of things can happen where it costs you to be on the internet, and that'll get rid of a lot of people who are using it in an appropriate manner. Again, you can get rid of opposition. You can control the narrative. Those with money have the power in this situation. And governments who want to manipulate our political system potentially have the power to censor, even more so than it's being censored now. So if people haven't been paying attention to this, they really do need to start paying attention to this. October 1st, according to the government, they're going to cede the control of the internet to the UN, and that means to other countries such as China or Saudi Arabia or anybody else who decides that they don't like what's going on the internet, they can just shut it down. And it's in our power now to let our voices be heard. I would email, I would call my congressperson and let them know what I think, because, you know, Pokemon Go is not important, but this is. And on that note, I want to thank everybody for listening to Medicine on Call today, and I look forward to speaking with you again next week. Have a great week.
Thank you, Dr. George. We'll talk to you next week.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.